Well, that was great. And Dr. Sumner, we have just a couple more questions for you. Your presentation, most of your slides presented a longer term or used to look at some smoothing characteristics, looking compared to three-year averages. In looking at the information, the data, do you get any sense that the short-term moves are bigger or smaller than they used to be in terms of prices?
Except for dairy, there's no indication that we've seen that percentage changes in prices have fluctuations have gotten bigger. Of course, it has to be relative to something, and so it's reasonable to think it's relative to some sort of recent past or to a longer-term trend. When we talk about fluctuations, we're talking about fluctuations relative to some norm. I think what we've seen for much of agriculture in the long swing is that prices, certainly crop agriculture, dairy, beef, is that long-term prices have declined. And sometimes we see a dip in prices, and we, of course, don't know whether that's part of the long-term downward trend or whether that's just a temporary blip down. One thing I do want to emphasize here is that I didn't talk about specifically about individual farm management strategies because, of course, we just heard a great presentation on that. But I do want to emphasize that I talked about commodity output prices. That's only part of the story. And we could have equally shown talking about fertilizer prices or gas prices or other interest rates, you name it. We know there's fluctuations throughout agriculture as well as variations in yield, some of which are dealt with by crop insurance, many of which are not really dealt with by crop insurance.
So just to follow up a bit on that, do you have any thoughts on how well crop insurance or other risk management tools work to increase the volatility or to reduce the volatility?
Two things to say about that. One, for the individual grower, if crop insurance is available and yield fluctuations are a major issue, then clearly that can be a strategy that can help, particularly given a relatively high subsidy rates for crop insurance in the United States. What we've observed both in the United States and elsewhere is there's very little participation in crop insurance without subsidy and substantial premium subsidies. So I take that as an indication that in and of itself, yield insurance or even revenue insurance isn't, growers don't see that as a major solution for them if they really have to pay the full cost. The reason premiums tend to be high for crop insurance when they're not subsidized is that there's lots of variability in agriculture, and if you're paying someone else to take some of that risk, you're going to pay a substantial amount. There are other commodities, of course, where crop insurance hasn't paid much. Now, that's from the point of view of the individual grower. From the individual of industries, crop insurance can, of course, increase the fluctuations in the industry. How does that happen? Because with subsidized crop insurance, you attract people into the business who have more variability, and that tends to create additional variability in prices. So that is, I have growers that wouldn't be growing a crop unless they could have access to crop insurance. They now do grow the crop. They have more, say, yield fluctuations, and that shows up in higher industry-wide price fluctuations. So it's one thing to think about it. Most of the folks here are thinking about it from the point of view of the individual grower. From the point of view of a broad public policy question, it's another issue about whether crop insurance reduces fluctuations for industries in general.
A couple of questions. I'm going to ask you two questions, and then we've run past our time, but this has just been really good, and I don't want to pass the opportunity up of getting your insights. We've had a couple questions about land and land values, and how do you see them moving in relationship to these? Any shifts or changes there?
You know, I started when I reviewed my slides. I put a big land values with an exclamation point right in my notes, and then forgot to mention it even there. So I'm really glad that question came up. Most growers, of course, have much of their equity in land, and land is a very important a backer for loans and other access to credit that can smooth out fluctuations. We know that bankers would want to see the cash flow, they want to see the profitability opportunities before they make loans, but land values are crucial for the long run for everybody in agriculture. We've seen relatively steady increases in land values. There's a case where, let me say it first, if I knew what was going to happen to land values locally or nationally or broadly, I'd be too rich to waste my time talking to you folks, because obviously, so I'm not going to sit here and try to predict where land values are going. But what we do know is that land values have continued to rise, and they tend to move with commodity prices. They tend to move with potential profitability. Fluctuations in land prices, particularly large ones, can be devastating for long run planning for people, both estate planning and other things. So land prices are a place where we are potentially vulnerable to very large shocks. We've seen that outside of farming, of course. House prices and other things have fluctuated, and people that aren't in a position to take to weather those kinds of large fluctuations, say people with mortgages and annual payments or monthly payments that aren't sufficiently hedged, are in terrible shape. That can happen in agriculture. I'm not confident that land values are continuing to rise. I really don't know. They could be, but I'm not confident that that is sure to happen. And I think there really is a potential there for substantial fluctuation looking into the future.
And one final question for you. Is the recession over? What's the impact for ag?
Yeah, the technical definition of recession doesn't mean simply tough times in the economy. It means the economy is continuing to shrink. So that is, recession means is the economy continuing to shrink? And the answer to that was no. The recession began in December of 2007. That was the first period we saw the widespread shrinking of the economy. And the recession officially ended in July 2009. That's a year and a half ago. Is the economy still in lousy shape? Yes. Could we have entered a second recession? That's possible. I don't think so. The most recent data suggests that's probably not the case. So let me rephrase the question is, when are we going to have substantial enough economic growth in the U.S. economy that it's going to substantially increase demand for lots of income-sensitive products back to normal? I don't see it in the short-term horizon. I'm not a macroeconomic forecaster, but I don't see anybody saying we're going to have the 4%, 5%, or 6% growth that will rapidly bring us back to where we were, and that will move unemployment away from the threatening double digits and back down into the 3%, 4%, or 5% that was normal when the economy is growing at a robust pace. That said, U.S. agriculture depends for a substantial part of its market on exports, and the global economy never did suffer a recession. That's because China and India continued to grow. They didn't grow quite as quickly as before. They have been growing robustly this year. So to the extent that we tie U.S. agriculture or you're associated with a commodity that's tied to growth, particularly in Asia, the market continues to expand. We see that, for example, in the beef industry, where Asian growth, opening of the Korean market, which we're all hoping for here soon, will provide substantial firmness in that market. It's also true that U.S. agriculture is not nearly as tied to demand from associated with recessions as it used to be. We don't have recessions that affect the demand for food like we had 40 or 50 or 60 years ago. Now, there are a few exceptions. High-priced wine took a hit in the recession. The beef markets, in fact, fluctuated but seemed to be on their own pace, not tied to how well the economy is growing. So even a commodity, even a product like beef, or even a product like, say, the demand for fed steers and heifers that go into muscle cuts, don't seem to be tied to economic growth in the United States like they might have been a few decades ago.
Well, thank you very much. And I remind our audience that this whole webinar today will be up on the Ag and Uncertain Times webpage probably by early next week. And if you would send an email in to us, we'll let you know exactly when that and that happens. So thank you very much, Dan, for this exceptionally informative presentation. Remind folks that tomorrow morning we'll be back focusing on volatility in beef markets with Dr. Gary Brester and John Hewlett. A week from today, we're going to be focusing in on volatility in grain markets with Dr. Edward Allen, who is part of the USDA Outlook Group, and Duane Griffith from Montana State University, who is actually also our host, whose voice you've heard and who's bailed me out in this webinar this morning. And then a week from tomorrow, volatility in fresh fruits and vegetables with Dr. Roberta Cook, marketing economist at UC Davis, and Dr. Kinda Curtis from Utah State University. Again, this information is going to be up on the Ag and Uncertain Times website. You can Google Ag and Uncertain Times. There are recordings of webinars. The presenter slide sets are there, the list of speakers and contact information. So if you want to contact people afterwards, there's a wiki site for discussion of webinar sites. All of the webinars are up there as a video recording, as an audio MP3 recording, which you can download and listen to, or as a SWF recording, which makes it really simple to insert all or part of this in your own PowerPoint presentation and be able to see it. And this slide actually is that off of our website, and there is also tutorials on how you use each of these and how you can incorporate these directly into presentations. I've done that. It works well. It's great to be able to bring in someone like Dr. Sumner on a particular point and use it with your group. Another resource material, the MITnet at extension.org, one of the e-extension websites with information. So we have a file share window. There's if you'll click on this link here, and it'll tell you how to download that to your computer, so you can download that PDF file, and it's got all of these web links right in it. So I'm going to leave that slide there so that you can download that if you choose, if you haven't remembered. Again, with the power of the Google search, you can just Google Ag and Uncertain Times, and it'll get you to this information. And on behalf of our Ag and Uncertain Times team, who are all members of the Western Extension Committee, which are the farm management and marketing specialists in the 13 land-grant universities in the 13 western states. Thank you for participating, and hope that this information will be put to good use. Thank you.